Welcome to the Wolverine Digest Podcast, the best spot for objective and authentic coverage of Michigan athletics. If you want open dialogue, honest opinions, and in-depth coverage of the maize and blue, this is the podcast for you. And now, here's your host, Brandon Brown, joined as always by Chris Brandler.
I'm just going to start by saying go blue.
We're back. We're live. We're in color. We're ready to roll. We were debating whether or not you used your new laptop already. I guess you have. Talk about the firebomb before we get going into everything today.
Listen, I'm so happy that you brought that up because I actually brought it in. Like it's so ridiculous what happened that I went outside and before we hopped on the show, I had my son throw it up to me. Has anybody out there ever had their laptop explode into a ball of fire? Like picture, like, you know how like the fireworks you can purchase on the 4th of July, not like the ones that shoot up in the sky, but those really powerful. Yeah, and they just shoot sparks out like a motherfucker. Whisker do's, whisker don'ts.
Yeah.
Long story short, I don't know if you could see this.
Wow.
This thing here, like was,
that's the battery.
Yeah, it was in my kitchen, so I was trying to pry it apart because I had to get something in the memory. I couldn't get one of the screws out. I must have hit the battery, and the damn thing exploded in the kitchen that we just remodeled. So this thing's like a ball of fire. I'm picking it up with my bare hands. I like heaved it out into the backyard because I thought it might explode. But yeah, so
crisis. That's wild. I know when you told me that, I was like, dude, can you imagine that if it had happened on a plane or something? Like we've
heard of that. Yeah.
Obviously, well, it took some damage from the owner, yeah. But so it wasn't like it was just sitting there in perfect condition and that happened. But
like
still,
I said, if that were to happen on an airplane,
problem
that would be big problems. Yeah. So
that's crazy. All right, well we'll get over the trauma from the exploding laptop. We will recover from the week of wacky weather. I've been thinking about this, you know, like as two dudes who grew up in the state of Michigan, like we hear about that and have talked about that our whole lives, you know, like if you don't like the weather, wait till tomorrow. It's like literally, dude, accumulation of snow, 80 degrees, and then like a 45 degree rainy just downpour all day. That's what we had here. I don't know what it was like everywhere else. But it got me wondering, like, if there's actually some, you know, tangible evidence or measurements or facts, figures, whatever, statistical breakdown of which state deals with that kind of thing the most. Because I see on Twitter all the time in different places on social media, like, Texas claims that they have the craziest weather, and other Oklahoma, and, like, down in certain parts of Florida, it can be pretty cold on one day and then super hot the next day. So I just wonder. I wonder if Michigan really does, like, take the crown for having the most temperamental weather, like from day to day, because that last week was pretty nuts.
Well, it might, but I'll tell you this, you Brandon, you know I'm a sweaty guy. You know I'm a guy that
I've been known to sweat
when the temperature just gets to a certain point. My body just says things are going to get wet out there, and there's really nothing I can do about it. But I've about had it, man, with the cold weather. Look, I am ready for some consecutive warm days. I need to get some sun on these legs. I got some new shorts I'm ready to rock, but I can't even wear them because I'm so pasty. Mm-hmm. We need a change in the weather, man.
It's common.
I know people got up in arms and there was a big stink about that dome concept I put out over Michigan Stadium. But look, man, I'm telling you, when it gets really, really cold out, it would be nice to just, you know, it's nice to be warm. I like to be warm and cozy.
And it wasn't like horrible out today, kind of cold, but like the sun's out.
Dwayne Jones confirms that Texas weather is crazy. What's crazy about Texas weather?
Well, so I just Texas picture it being has warm like and dry. Really, Texas has like really extreme, like you can get like badass tornadoes and like severe weather. Like, and then the next day can be super nice. I don't know if you get the wild temperature fluctuations and like one day snow and the next day it's 80. Like that's it was literally snowing out, and then 2 days later it was 80.
Maybe it's like crazy, Denver. Dude. Denver, you can get something like that.
Yeah, Denver, but then I think you have to go up in the elevator. Whatever.
Yeah,
anyway, we're talking.
Look at us, a couple of weathermen over here.
I did take weather twice in college. Actually, took it once, got a D. Took it again to replace it on my GPA later on down the line. So there you go.
Got another D.
No, I got an A that time, bro. Okay. When I really buckled down and realized that, like, oh, I can't. graduate the way that I want to because I was a dumbass as a freshman and decided to party and not go to class ever. So anyway, here we go. Let's get into the real deal stuff. Over the last couple of days, Michigan basketball, some big, big announcements. Obviously, the biggest one, and I can't remember if we talked about this. No, we didn't, right? Because this all three of these decisions have happened since last Wednesday. Yeah. When we were on. So Hunter Dickinson is coming back. He put out the big post. I'm not done yet. I've got things to do. NIL is reportedly a big part of it. He's kind of talked about that a little bit since then. Caleb Houston, on the other hand, has decided to enter his name into the NBA draft and see what happens there, as has Musa Diabate. So they're both going to check it out. Me and you both, you put up the story on, I think, Musa. I put up the story on Caleb. Both of us think the same thing. Go in there, check it out, probably come back to Michigan because they're not on a lot of draft boards. Like we've talked about 100 times before. All it takes is one team to fall in love with a guy and see something that nobody else does and draft a player. I mean, we saw that with DJ Wilson. We saw that with Jordan Poole, who's obviously shining right now. Duncan Robinson also kind of in that mix. So, but in terms of leaving a little early, I think a lot of people would say that these guys aren't quite ready for the next level yet, but the NBA is a potential league. And so we'll see what happens. So just to look at these numbers real quick, and then I want your thoughts on these dudes leaving and if it is too early and what's going to end up happening. Caleb Houston, 10.1 points and 4 rebounds a game. He played 32 minutes a night. I know there was a ton of nights where you're like, dude, he just played 30-plus minutes and he's got no points. Like, that happened more than a couple times, I feel like, with Caleb Houston. Musa Diabate didn't play as much, 25 minutes a game, averaged 9-6. It wasn't like both of these dudes blew up and they were obvious choices to be one and dones. But also, why not? You know, why not go check it out and see what they can find out and move on from there?
Yeah, I agree. And I think having Juwan Howard around probably helps, you know, facilitate that process a little bit because maybe they understand better the value of going through that process and getting the necessary feedback. Hunter Dickinson himself did it. And so I'm sure those two players, you know, I don't think that they made these decisions alone. I think that these conversations happen within the team. I think it's a good thing for them to do, but I certainly think that both of them should come back. I mean, the comparison, with Jordan Poole and a lot of people thinking that he went early. He also made some really big plays during his collegiate career and did some things while he was at Michigan. I love Musa Diabate, and I think Caleb Houston could be something special. But both of those guys, I think I haven't seen from a personal standpoint nearly enough out of them to believe, like, even if a team falls in love with them, that they can, they would succeed immediately in the NBA. I mean, and I think one of the good things I think Hunter mentioned it and as part of the reason why he came back, NIL is going to help keep some of these guys around who would otherwise say, look, if I've got a chance to go make $1 million in the NBA or go play overseas, I'm going to do it. Now that they've got the opportunity to do that through NIL, you might see some of these guys who would otherwise split early stick around.
Yeah, we can clear this up, Caleb, for you from an earlier episode. Chris does not hate Hunter Dickinson. Chris and I talked on the phone one time while preparing for a show, and he just thought, well, what
I can lay it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Put it in your own words, Chris.
Listen, my gripe with Hunter Dickinson is that I do think he's really, really good. And I do think he could be really, really dominant. And sometimes I just think for as big as he is and as talented as he is, sometimes to me, he comes off a little bit soft, whether it be in the post or on the floor in general. I know he gets in those moments where he flexes and he's, I'm him and all of this sort of thing. But like, there's certain times where I feel like Hunter Dickinson should A, be more of a leader on the floor, and B, be a guy who just takes over more often. Like when Michigan needs a bucket, Michigan didn't have a guy like that this past season where like they needed 2 points, put the ball in his hands and you're going to get 2 points. That guy should be Hunter Dickinson every single time. And I feel like he doesn't play the role that he should play to its fullest potential. Maybe that's just me being an asshole fan, but that's, my gripe with him isn't that he sucks. It's that I think he's really, really good and that he doesn't play up to that.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely see flashes of it, but you also see, I agree, a little, deferring at times. And not all of that's been at him. I've talked as a former superstar point guard, I found myself getting very frustrated a lot by how the guards wouldn't give him the damn ball. Like, he's working, he's put in position, he's putting the work in early, getting 2 feet in the paint, he's got position, he's got a guy in his back, and they move it around and they look and then they swing it in. He would get frustrated. We saw it a lot more in the early parts of the season, not so much down the stretch, but it's not all on him. I mean, he's not bringing the – somebody's got to get him the ball. I mean, that's the deal with your post players. But I don't disagree. I think
that's a conversation where on the next time out, you walk over to your team and you say, get me the damn ball. Like, we need 2 points. Like, you know, it's Hunter Dickinson. You know what I mean? We need a bucket. Get me the ball. That's where I feel like that other side of him, that like – that killer instinct that, you know, the thing that the great ones have, you know, that other side of the mentality where, you know, they'll demand things out of their teammates. I just don't know that Hunter has that. Maybe he doesn't have that in him. I've never quite seen that come out where I view him as like a leader on the floor. He's always just a very big piece of what's going on. If that makes sense.
And, you know, he's still been a young player. I mean,
young guy.
Maybe he comes back as a junior and he has a completely different mentality and mindset and approach.
That's what happens when you have that kind of freshman season. I mean, people, you know, you start looking at him a little bit differently. And when he came back, I think expectations were really, really high for Hunter Dickinson. I don't know that it's, I mean, would you say that, you know, he came back for another year, the second year, did it meet expectation? Did it, you know, is it pretty much where you thought it would be, his game by year two?
I'd say not quite, but it's I mean, like, he was just so good as a freshman. I mean, it's not like he's going to double his output. I mean, it would have been, you know, I mean, he did such a good job as a freshman that I don't think you were going to see a massive jump in any one area. But yeah, and it's hard to measure that other stuff, the intangible stuff. I mean, you can look at the numbers all day long, but in terms of, you know, pulling your team along and demanding things and commanding things in the right way. And that's tough.
And let me and clearly, I don't know.
Everybody's perception.
I'm not in the timeouts. I'm not in the locker room. I'm not, sure. I don't know if maybe there's an element to that. I'm just saying from my standpoint, what I see and what I envision doesn't match up. And I hope that comes up. I was excited when we got the news that he was coming back. I think Michigan is once again going to be in the mix for a deep tournament run. That you know, potential starting five looks really solid, and he's going to be a big, big part of that. I just want to see him be a little bit more nasty, I guess, on the floor, like a little more demanding of the ball at a time when Michigan needs points.
And I think the one thing, if I could, and again, you're exactly right. We're not in the practices. We're not in the meeting rooms. We have no idea what things look like behind closed doors or how things, you know, work, you know, the dynamic between him and the coaches and the other players. No clue. We just see what happens on game day. But if there's one thing about Hunter Dickinson that I wish he would tweak a little bit in terms of his mentality and his approach, and it's what we just kind of laid out from start to finish right there. The highs are really high, but the lows get a little low. And you don't see that out of like elite leader killer type dudes. Like, think of like Chris Paul, guys, they're right here all the time. They get a little bump when they're really killing it, but they never dip down. You don't see the horrible body language. You don't see, you don't see the frustration show up very often. I mean, nobody's perfect, but I think of guys like, you know, when things are really, really going well for them, they're running their mouth, they got tons of energy, they're doing this, they're yapping, and then when they're really down or they lose or they have a bad game, they just turn into little babies. Cam Newton is like the president of that group. Like, he will get on a press conference and talk the most shit ever when he has a good game. And when he has a bad game, he just acts like a baby. Hunter Dickinson's not like that, but he dips and dives a little bit, in my opinion, in terms of what you're talking about, like the leadership and just being that alpha night in and night out for 40 minutes. Like, I think there is a little bit to grow there. And I think that's fair. Like, we both just, I mean, he just finished his sophomore season. It's not like he's a fifth year senior.
Right.
He's got some time to figure some of those things out, but huge, massively huge development for him to be back next year. And you mentioned that starting five, if they do end up landing the transfer from Terrence Shannon Jr., you could, and we'll see what happens with Caleb Houston, Musa Diabate, but that could be your starting five. Frankie Collins, Terrence Shannon Jr., Caleb Houston, Musa Diabate, Hunter Dickinson. That is as talented a group as you can find, and a very versatile, very long, a little bit more athletic with a guy like Terrence Shannon and Frankie Collins in there than last year. So we'll see. They're going to be really good. The recruiting class coming in is solid. It's not star-studded necessarily like Hunter Dickinson's class was, or this past class was, I should say, the number one class in the country, but it's good. And so obviously Michigan will be in the mix for a Big Ten title and another tournament run, like you said. Don't want to spend a ton of time on this because it's all speculation, obviously, right now, but the NFL draft is coming up. The big news is going to be what happens with Aiden Hutchinson, especially since he could go number one overall, which is a huge story. Or if he doesn't, he could go number two overall to the hometown Detroit Lions. Chris, I know you're not like a huge, huge NFL guy, but Aiden Hutchinson staying in the backyard and going to the Lions, like, I mean, come on, that's pretty badass. It's got to be, I don't know if that's what he wants because the Lions haven't been historically very good, but in terms of like, you know, what it could mean for that city and everybody's familiarity with him, I think it would be pretty freaking sweet.
Well, I was going to say, if you want to continue on the, you know, just sort of the storybook ride that he's been on over the last year in terms right. of his football career, you know, for it to continue on in the state of Michigan, I mean, he's got already one hell of a fan base in the state. I think, you know, he's going to put asses in the seats. People are going to want to go see Aiden Hutchinson play for the Lions. It's not like it's going to be a huge game changer, but I mean, in terms of like what he brings on the field, I think that's big, but yeah, man, I think it would be really cool to see him in Detroit and give, you know, maybe Lions fans who are looking for something to get excited about, something to be happy about. That's why, you know, look, the Lions have not been very good for a long time, and I just haven't really been able to latch on to another NFL team. So for me, the NFL has always just kind of been like, I'll turn it on Sundays when we're like doing our work after Saturdays. But, you know, if the Lions could get some, if they could get something going, I might be able to find some interest there. But, I got people, you're a Buffalo fan. Like, how the hell does that happen?
I'm not a Buffalo. I've said I wanted to become a Buffalo.
Oh, you fan. Wanted to become a Buffalo. Oh, you're trying to mold your son into yes. a Buffalo fan. That's
my wife's right. from upstate New York. Her family's Buffalo fan. So I'm like, well, we'll try to push Sullivan in that direction. So he doesn't have to suffer for 40 years like I almost already have with the Lions. My dad's 60. He's been suffering with the Lions. I mean, anybody out there who's a Lions fan knows what that's all about. But no, going to Detroit would be cool. And like the Lions do look like they're putting some things in the right place. Their offense has the potential to be pretty good next year and really good if they could eventually find a QB. Offensive line's really good. Some good athletes on the edge. Very good running game with DeAndre Swift. Defense has some holes to fill, and you start filling one of those big in a big way with a guy like Aiden Hutchinson. I think he's the safest pick in the top, whatever, how you know, that top tier of guys, whether it's 3, 4, 5, 6 guys, wherever you kind of draw that line, if there's a quarterback in there, whatever, he's the safest guy. I mean,
so
you don't
think it's hype. You think he's the real deal. You think it's going to be, there's longevity in the NFL. Would you put him in with, cause there was a lot of people that made gripes when, you know, the Bosa brother comparisons were coming out and things like that. I mean, do you foresee that kind of career out of Hutchinson?
Well, here's the deal. One thing is that, and I know Aiden did deal with an injury last year, but it wasn't like, that's not been a theme in his career. It was a broken, if I'm not mistaken, it was a broken bone, which that doesn't seem to be a recurring type of thing. He loves football. He's going to give his all. And I think the off the field stuff with him is elite. You know, the work ethic, the leadership skills, the football in the veins type of thing. And the Boses, I would have said, like on the surface, I would have said that the Boses were a little more athletic and more dynamic, but they're not. Like the numbers say that they're not. Aiden tested just as well and or if not better than both of the Bosa brothers in just about every category, except for maybe, was it 40-yard dash? He was just a hair behind him, but all the other stuff was as good or better. And I just think he's the safest pick. He might not have quite as high a ceiling as like a guy like Trayvon Walker, who's a little bit more freakishly athletic. I don't like Kayvon Thibodeau. I think he's got, he thinks he's like a movie star playing football or something.
Yeah, there's too much off the field there.
I get a vibe from him that he's not all in and, like, you know, he gets a little tweaked toe and he's like, oh, I'm going to be sitting out this week. You're not going to get that with Aiden, man. That dude would play on one leg if he could. And so I think there's real value there, and I think he is going to be really good and have staying power in the NFL for a really long time. And I think that's, you know, that's what you're looking for in those top first few, you know, 3, 4, 5 picks. So we'll see,
especially if he can do it in Detroit. So even better.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see how that ends up going. And then obviously David Ojabo, I'm interested to see where he goes after the ruptured Achilles. Horrible injury, horrible timing. We've talked about that in the past. It just sucks because the dude had an incredible story. It was looking like a top 15 or top 20 pick. And he, you know, he blows out his Achilles. And now I've actually still seen some mocks where he goes at the very end of the first round. I don't think that's going to happen, but there's some out there that do. And so we'll see what ends up happening there. Daxon Hill, the other guy who could potentially go late in the first round. I think he's more of a second round pick, but we'll see. So there's some intrigue for Michigan football fans with the draft coming up tomorrow. And then obviously into the later rounds, there's a bunch of dudes that could end up getting picked. You know, what was it, like 8 or 10 guys got invited to the combine or something like that. So it'll be worth a watch. I always tune into the draft. It's kind of like a football nerd thing, I know, but I like it. I like thinking about those rookies and where they're going to be at, how they fit in. And as a Lions fan, they have a couple picks in the first, three picks in the first 34 picks. Is that right? I might be wrong on that. I know they've got first, 32nd, and I think, or I'm sorry, second, 32nd, and I think 34th as well.
Which is usually the case, right? They're usually picking high in the draft.
Yeah.
There's always excitement on draft day for Lions fans until they name off that tight end or that tackle, right? Is that where people are at with the Lions? They want the big home run pick. I've seen people, there are some people clamoring for the quarterback. Where is out of Jacksonville State? What's his name?
Malik Willis, man.
Malik Willis.
We'll see what ends up happening with him. I think it's a little risky. I mean, there's a boomer bust kind of intrigue there, I think, and he's super athletic. He's got a cannon for an arm. But he's, you know, he hasn't played against really anybody, and against his best competition, he hasn't thrown it really well. I think he ran for 5 touchdowns against ranked teams, which he only played like 2 or 3 or something. Right, so right. Like got it done with his legs, not so great with his arm against those teams. But anyway, yeah, there's intrigue. There's intrigue all over the place, whether you're a Lions fan, Michigan fan, whatever. I'll be tuning in. I'll be interested in that. So we'll see how that goes for Aiden Hutchinson, especially. I mean, he's still hoping to be the number one overall pick, I think, obviously just for that title. But I think the odds on favorite to go number one now is Trayvon Walker, the big D lineman from Georgia. So we'll see how all that plays out. All right. And then last but not least, before we get into our over under segment, that's going to take a good bit of the show. That might be pretty much all we do. Yeah. Cam Good transferring to Michigan from Central Florida. Big fella, 6'2". 315, 330. I've seen him listed up north of 330. Wherever he's at, he's a big guy. Played in all 13 games for the Golden Knights last year. Is it Golden Knights or Black Knights? Black Knights. Central Florida Black Knights?
I think it's Golden a Black Knight. The Golden Knights, but it's a blackish logo.
I'm really pissed off that I don't know that.
Maybe it's the Golden Black Knights.
It's not the Golden Black Knights. Golden Knights. Cam Good played in 13 games, 24 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, had a pick. Fat guy interceptions are always awesome. He had
love it. And rumbling and tumbling and stumbling.
We're going to get to him a little bit later. I have him as part of my over-unders that we're going to get to. But initial thoughts on Cam Good. I mean, we knew that Michigan needed some help in the middle. I guess why not, right? I mean, see what he can do.
Yeah. My initial thoughts were when Michigan went out and got Whitley last year. And I was like, big dude, probably going to play a role in plugging up the middle. And then, you know, he hardly saw the field. And so you would expect given the fact that Michigan, you know, lost a guy like Hinton up front, they're going to need some depth there, that you would see him on the field. His tape looks all right. Looks pretty good. But all I'll say is Michigan needs some depth there. They now have some depth there. And so that's always a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's always, I'm with you. They go out and get Jordan Whitley. You're like, that dude's going to play. New scheme. They need a big run stopper in the middle. Mike McDonald's going to utilize him, and he played 33 snaps last year. That's it.
Like, just a dude that can, like, stand there on the goal line. Like, not even move. Like, your job is just don't be moved.
So we'll see what that ends up looking like for Cam Good. But another big, squatty. He's not very tall.
No.
But, you know, weighs a lot. He's twitchy, though. He's quick. He's quick for a big dude. That you can kind of see that in the sack numbers. I mean, when you think of like 320-pound nose tackles, you don't think tackles for loss and sacks. And he was moderately productive last year in that area. So that's a little promising, more so than Whitley was in that regard.
I like that with the thick six.
Yeah. Thick six, I like that. I didn't have this on my list, but I've seen a couple people ask. Juwan Howard was spotted at an event somewhere chopping it up with Imani Bates, and apparently Michigan is involved with him. The former Michigan State commit and Memphis freshman is in the transfer portal, and Michigan is the school that he's reportedly been talking to. And then that picture surfaced where he's talking with Juwan Howard on the sidelines at an event. So I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. The dude's been a headache. He's talented. He's not overly physical. He's got a short wingspan actually for his height. But he can absolutely shoot it from the outside. He is he's as tall as Juwan in that. Dude's like 6'10". He's pushing 6'9", 6'10", and he can shoot it from the outside probably better than most of Michigan's games last year from the outside. So there's, I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting that Michigan's reportedly in contact and that Juwan was talking to him. I mean, what do you – would you take an Imani Bates at Michigan with the roster that they have next year?
No. No, I wouldn't, because it sort of reminds me of the same thing as, like – it's not really the same thing, but it is. Like the Xavier Worthy thing, where there's just too much bullshit that, mm-hmm. like, surrounds a player. And, like, whether or not it's, you know – as a result of their own doing or the outside or whatever it is, it just seems like this guy is like a polarizing dude. There's a lot of people that always talk about him and have their eyes on him. And I think what Juwan and Michigan are doing, I just think they're fine without that. To me, the risk is greater than the reward of bringing a kid like that on campus.
I will say this. What you said's not untrue. Going to Memphis made all of it like 10 times worse.
There's no question.
Was a shit show there this year with Penny Hardaway, you know, cussing out media people and just losing his mind, and like one of the most talented groups in the country, and they couldn't win against anybody. And it just, you know, far away from home and the wrong people involved and going there for the wrong reasons. It was, I don't know, that made it worse. So I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, but you wonder, maybe Juwan could get the absolute best out of a kid like that. I don't know. I just think what you've got,
if you're Juwan Howard, what you've got going, like even a bad year, like a down year led to what, a Sweet 16 run. I mean, you have to just like, you got to protect that thing. Like it's a baby and you've got this thing running. And I just think, I don't know. I feel like shiny objects like that. Like, yeah, of course, come on. That's a score. That's a guy that can, you know, put the ball in the hole. But at the end of the day, is it worth,
yeah,
you know, the potential risk to, you know, the locker room and the culture that you've built? I don't know. That guy just seems like a lightning rod for some reason. And some people are just that way.
Yeah. And you see some people mentioning it. He reclassified. So he's supposed to be finishing up his senior year of high school still. So that, you know, he'll have another year to get, you know, get a little bit more physically ready, a little more mentally ready. Let's be honest. I mean, he was away from the team and then he came back and he's, you know, his recruitment was weird. And I mean, I went and saw the kid play twice in person because he's from Ipsy, Lincoln, right around the corner from where I live. I went and watched him play twice when he was a freshman, and he scored like 45 a night against another really good athletic team in Ipsy, in Ipsy High. And it was just like, I cannot believe this kid is a freshman in high school. Now, he plateaued a little bit. He didn't get a lot better from that ninth grade year on, but he was the first ever Mr. Michigan, you know, Mr. Basketball as a freshman, and won a state championship at Lincoln. And like, the kid can score buckets, man. There's no doubt about that. I know he wasn't as good at Memphis as a lot of people thought he might be. I don't think that was all on him, but you're right, dude. That like weirdness and attention and kind of bad scenarios just seem to kind of follow that kid. And I don't know why that is, but we'll see. If, you know, Juwan thinks he can get through to him and get the most out of him, I would trust Juwan's judgment on that. But it's,
that's what I was going to say. If there's one coach at this point in his career who can probably, you know, get him on track and get him where he needs to be, it's a guy like Juwan Howard. And so, you know, maybe it's not as big of a risk because you have a coach like Juwan Howard as it might be in some other programs.
I mean, I saw I shouldn't say that. No, I'm going to say it. I saw Imani get in a few dust ups and want to, you know, throw some hands. I'm like, well, he fit right in with Juwan over there, right? I shouldn't have done that. But no, we'll see how that ends up playing out. I would guess that Imani Bates does not end up at Michigan, but there does seem to be a little bit of smoke there. Whether that turns into fire or not remains to be seen. I would guess not, because if Caleb Houston and Musa Diabate both come back, Michigan already has a numbers issue with the scholarship. So then you throw Imani Bates into the mix, and now you've got an even bigger issue. So I don't know. We'll see how all that plays out. But there you go. All right. Over-unders, dude. I'm ready. It's time, dude. We're going to do our over-unders. We're going to talk about Michigan football. We decided to split. Chris, I looked down for 1 second to do the soundboard, and Chris has disappeared. Oh, you're right here. It literally looked like you were out of this. Thought. I didn't even see you like leaning over. All right. Chris is taking all offense. I am taking all defense and special teams. These are over-unders for the upcoming season. I've got a couple that aren't true over-unders, but they still kind of fit the mold here. This is going to be fun because it's always fun to talk football, even though it's only April 27th. We're still going to do it. Are you ready?
Every day. I'm always ready. I'm always.
You want to go first? Or you want me to get it going?
I'll get it going first. Let's get it started.
All right.
All right, Brandon. I want the over under or I have the over under for the total touchdowns for this trio in 2022 set at 39 and a half.
Okay.
For Blake Corum, Donovan Edwards, and AJ Henning. Now, for reference, those three players, Edwards, Corum, and Henning, had 18 total touchdowns in 2021. So I've got the over-under set at 39 and a half in 2022.
God, that is a lot of touchdowns. I'm going to say under. I mean, I think they're going to be really productive. I like, as you were saying their names, I went like 12, 8, 5. That puts them way under. That's under. 25. I think Corum's like a 12, 15 touchdown guy. I think Donovan.
So then you must be assuming that a lot more is happening in the passing game in 2022. Then
I just think it's going to be a little more spread out. I know Hassan Haskins had 20 or 21 or whatever it was by himself last year. I don't see that happening again, but I don't know, man. I think 39 and a half to hit 40 touchdowns.
Henning with the Debo Samuel type role coming out of the backfield. You think that's – you still go under. Okay, fair enough. That's a lot.
You're talking all three of those guys in the double digits.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of touchdowns. I'm going to say under. I think they're going to be really good. I think all three of those guys are going to be really good and dynamic and really bring an element that we didn't see in full last year. Because Donovan Edwards was a true freshman. Didn't play a ton, but when he was in there, you saw what he could do. I mean, we talked about it all last year. We're like, oh, cool. AJ Henning got less snaps than six walk-ons. Like, what's happening?
Well, here's where I'm at. Yeah, AJ Henning played 19 offensive snaps in 2021. We know Donovan Edwards hardly touched the ball.
No, that's Blake not. 19 offensive snaps.
Or he had 19 touches. 19 touches. Rushes. Okay. 19 touches. 19 rushes. Or I'm sorry. Between receptions and rushes, he had 19 total touches.
That's way too few.
Way too few. So for Henning, he had 19 touches. We know the scenario with Donovan Edwards and how little he played his freshman year. And then Corum had a little bit of an injury issue and was obviously splitting with Haskins. And so to me, those three guys, if they get the ball, if they get used the way they should, then 39 and a half doesn't seem so unrealistic. But like you, just based on the way things have gone previously, I'm going to go under. But it's going to be interesting to see how close they get to that number, because I'd like to see weapons.
All three of those guys are so fun. They're just such fun football players to watch. It's exciting. I don't think they'll be that productive in that range. But, yeah, Sean, I mean, this is, you know, if you're talking 15, 15, and 5, you're still coming up short of that 39 number.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of production. I mean, they could all have really good seasons and still not hit that number. So I think that's just a high mark to set. So we'll see how that looks. All right, my first one is none other than, and I am excited for a Jake Moody finale season.
Wow.
I'm just doing a couple Jake Moody ones to get him out of the way for the special teams. The rest will be defense. This is incredible, dude. Jake Moody was 56 of 56 on extra points last year. Did you know that? Did you
realize
that?
He's really good. I know that? It's taped up on my mirror when I brush my teeth every morning. I read it.
Will Jake Moody be 100% on extra points again this year? Yes or no? 56 to 56, bro.
My gut says yes, but I'm going to go ahead and knock on wood now.
Okay.
And I actually think this is particle board, so I don't know if that counts.
That's incredible consistency. Not get one blocked, to not have a botch. Well, I don't know if botch snaps count. I don't think they do. Actually, now that I'm talking out loud, because he never put toe to leather. But to not have one blocked and to not even, you know, shank one at all, like, that's just crazy. That's crazy. I'm gonna say no, just because it seems insane to go two full years without missing an extra point. But 56 of 56 speaks for itself, man. That's incredible consistency for the Sledgehammer.
All right, we're going to go back on over to the offense now. My favorite guy, J.J. McCarthy. I'm going to set the over-under for touchdown passes in 2022 at 10.5, just 10.5. He had 5 touchdown passes in 2021. I've got the over-under in 2022 at 10.5. What do you got?
If he doesn't shatter that as the starting quarterback at Michigan, I will be bummed out.
What if he's not, though? What if he's not?
I'll be bummed out. That's what I'm saying. He's not a starter.
Oh, that's part of the...
Yeah, and he's not winging it all over the field and breaking Michigan's touchdown passing record, which is a paltry, what, 25, right?
25, yeah. We did the math. I called you the other day. I ran the math. That math did check out that JJ would have been on track to throw 27 touchdown passes against 10 interceptions if he had played as much as Cade McNamara, which would have been the Michigan record his freshman year. So
he's got to be the guy, and he's got to throw for 30 touchdowns. That's it.
That's it. I'm hammering 10.5. I'm hammering that. I am hammering that to shards of glass. 10.5. It better be, because if it's not, I will cry real tears.
I mean, dude, I don't even care if they do the same thing again, 12-1. When I don't want it. Start JJ. I want to see some fireworks, dude. I want to see some shit where we're like,
well, I want a guy back there who creates. I want a guy back there who gives us the best chance to win a national championship. I do think Michigan can win another Big Ten title if they start Cade McNamara all year. I don't think they can win a national championship with him. I do think they can with McCarthy, because he provides that other element that Cade doesn't have. Cade, for as good as he is, he's one-dimensional. He's not a risk to run the ball, or he's not a playmaker. He works within the system. Watch those highlights I put out. That's all JJ does is make plays. He runs around on the field. He makes shit happen. He's the type of guy that gets you from like where Michigan is now to that next level.
Yeah. When you put that highlight up, I texted you. I'm like, bro, I just went from 6 to midnight, dude. He's got to be the starter. He's got to be the starter, dude. Like, the plays he make. I mean, I know it wasn't every single game, and, like, he played sometimes when it didn't really matter. So he's
sparingly, though, and it was at odd times. You know, there was no rhyme or reason, and he made it happen.
Yes, Noah, electric is the word, man. Dynamic. Electric.
So we're both over on 10.5.
Talented. Yeah. 10.5. Yeah. He needs to just blow that out of the water. All right. I got another one. Right now, Jake Moody's career long is 52 yards. Does he take that up a notch in 2022? Does he boom a 53 yarder or longer?
I'm going to say no, but only because I don't think it'll be necessary. I think Michigan's going to be able to move the ball. I think they're going to spend a lot of time in the red zone. And I think if it comes down to, you know, a 53 yarder or trying to get 3 yards, I think that the offense is going to trust, or the OCs are going to trust this offense to get the yards.
I'm going to say he does. I'm going to say he, you know, you want to put one boom ass kick out there on film for his final year before he goes off to the NFL. Coach Harbaugh knows how that works. Moody's going to lobby for that. He's going to bang a 55-yarder this year, at least 55, dude. I mean, 52 is already solid, but I think he's going to get out there and really, really bang through a long one and get that double nickel, dude. I think he's going to improve on that mark as a. Is this his fifth year? I keep wanting to call him a fifth-year senior.
He's been around for a minute. That's
obviously
for sure.
A senior, his last year at Michigan because he had the choice, but I think he's going to improve on that mark.
All right, here we go. Back to the offense. Andrel Anthony, receptions in 2022. I've got it set at 30.5. Now, again, for reference, in 2021, Andrel Anthony had 12 receptions. As a comparison, Cornelius Johnson had 40, and Mike Sainristil, who's now playing defense, had 21 receptions last year. So I've got Andrel Anthony set at 30.5 for 2022.
I'm going to say under, but not by much. As soon as you started the question, I like doing that. If I can do it fast enough, I like getting a number before you finish, and then I just go with it. You know, it'll be up and down some games, but I came to the number 4. If he can get like 4 grabs a game, that puts him under 30 for the regular season. Now, if you're talking they go to the Big Ten championship and then they're in the playoff again or bowl game, it might sneak over that number. But 4 a game sets you at 28 catches. Ronnie Bell's expected to be back. If he's at full strength, he's gonna eat up a lot. The tight ends are back. The backs can both catch it. I just think it's hard to share the sugar that much to one dude, especially a sophomore who hasn't played a ton. I'll say under. But I think he'll be really good and he'll make some plays, but I just don't think he's gonna get that kind of volume.
Yeah, and for the same reasons I go under, simply because I just think there's too many to spread it around to. You got guys like Darius Clemens, Cornelius Johnson, AJ Henn. You know, you've got a lot of weapons
Roman
out
Wilson,
there. And so
Bell,
Roman Wilson, like, Ronnie. Yeah. Right. I can't even name them all.
Yeah.
So for him to get over 30 and a half, I think would be pretty special. But like I said, I think there's just too many weapons. Like you know, when Braylon Edwards, how the hell did he get 97 receptions in one? But you know how? He was the guy. He was the target. And Michigan just doesn't have that guy. They've got a lot of dudes that are really, really good.
Well, he's not going to be that kind of guy. But, you know, if JJ's the quarterback, him and Andrell got a thing. They got a thing, dude. We saw it a little bit last year. Maybe he can approach that number. I'm still going to say under, but I think he's going to be really good. I mean, he's going to take a step as a sophomore. If it is JJ, they're classmates, they're buddies, they work out together, they have a rapport, they have a chemistry. He might be a little more productive than we think, but, you know, if he finishes with 27 catches and he's the leading receiver, that's a problem. If he finishes with 27 right. And Ronnie Bell's got 45 and Cornelius has got 30 and A.J. Henning's got 10, and then it's a little bit more understandable, and that's why I think it'll be under that number. I'm intrigued to see where you go here, and I'm intrigued to see what the people think about this one. Young Bull. Mr. Will Johnson, over under 1.5 interceptions as a true freshman. 1.5. For the record, Daxton Hill and DJ Turner led Michigan with just 2 picks apiece last year.
I was just going to say, I'm going to go under. And I was thinking back, the one that immediately came to mind was Jabril Peppers had like one interception his whole Michigan career. I think Will Johnson is going to be tremendous. And obviously, if he gets a ton of snaps and he's a starter, that number has the chance to go up. But you're right. Like the leaders on the team last year had 2 apiece. And so for his freshman season, I'm going to take the under. But if it's over, I mean, that's about as good as you can ask for, because he's doing as good as anybody who's been there before him.
I think he's going to get 2. I think he's going to get 2.
You think it happens?
Yeah, I think he's going to pick off 2 passes.
2 while rocking the 2?
Yeah, I think he's going to get it. Okay, let me ask you this, and just to shade it down a little bit. You say, you think he's going to get any? You think he's going to go his whole
press? I can see him snag one. I think it'll be 1, 2, if he gets his hands on the ball his freshman year, I think a lot of people will be excited to see. Now, you want to put that at pick 6? Does he get a pick 6 the freshman year?
I know there. That's a really hard thing to do. I think he gets his hands on a couple. I do. I think he's going to play a lot. Yeah, Cody, that's exactly where my head went. They've got these 4 like tune-up games to kind of start the year. It wouldn't surprise me if he got himself 1 in one of those games where he's playing some garbage minutes or something, even if he's not an every down guy at that point. But I think there is going to be a point where he becomes the starter. Whether that's right out of the gate or if it's after the non-conference or whatever, I think Will Johnson will start at cornerback next year. So I'll say over, ever so slightly.
Ever so slightly over. Back to the offense. I've got Blake Corum for total rushing yards in 2022 set at 1,100.5. Now, for reference, I think he had, about 950 last year. Hassan Haskins had 1,327 last year. So this would put him about 220 yards short of what Hassan Haskins did last year.
If Blake Corum stays healthy, he will go over that mark.
That's over 1,100?
Yeah. He'll be a 1,000-yard rusher. He will eclipse that mark.
With all the weapons, even with Henning spending time in the backfield, even with Donovan Edwards.
You know they're going to run the ball lot. You know, I think they're going to run the ball a lot. It's going to come down to him staying healthy and how much he does split with Donovan Edwards, because he's dynamic and he's a weapon, and you got to get him on the field and use him as well. But we saw it last year. I mean, Blake Corum was well on his way to 1,000 yards before he hurt his ankle, and Hassan Haskins was doing the same thing. They should have had 2,000-yard running backs, but, you know, Corum was dinged for – how many games did he miss? Was it 4?
I think it was three.
Okay, so
– but I obviously missed some substantial time.
I think he's going to – dude, as you were saying that question, I said 1,100 in my head, and then you said half. I'm like, wow. All right, I'm going to give it to him. Because Blake, fan of the show – friend of the show, Blake Corum, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He will be over 1,100 yards rushing.
So I'm going to go
– this is your boy.
I know. I'm going to go under, though, because, listen, he got off to a real hot start in 2021. but things did slow down a little bit in Big Ten play. And I remember thinking that against Rutgers specifically. I was like, Jesus, why can't Michigan run the ball against Rutgers? And so I know that Blake Corum is primed to have a really, really big year. I just want to see it. I think he's got the capability to be a guy who's 13, 1400 yards. But as it stands now, given what I saw last year and all the other weapons that are around him, I'll go slightly under, but he will be over 1,000.
Another factor. If JJ McCarthy is indeed the starter, those 100% gives don't become 100% gives anymore.
There you go. Try to game plan for that.
You just said the number the other day when we were on the phone. How many rushing yards did Cade McNamara have? It was very minimal.
Like 42.
Yeah, like not even 50 yards. JJ will be well beyond that. If
JJ had 140 something rushing yards in the time that he had.
Yeah, so that changes things. You know, they do the mesh and they do the action and they do the zone look, even if it's a give. With JJ in there, it's not just a straight give anymore. You've got the option to pull it and keep it and go out the backside. So we'll see.
Which is the point, right?
Yeah.
You got to have a guy back there who poses that risk.
Dude, we might go for 3 hours tonight on this. I'm looking at the time. I'm like, I'm in my fourth one. Either we need to speed it up or we need to stop after five and do the rest next week. We could do that.
Let's speed it up because I feel like we could go quicker. We'd go quicker. Let's give a quick hitter on how we feel about each other.
Got a lot of hot air going.
Yeah, we got a lot of hot air.
All right. Junior Colson, super sophomore Junior Colson linebacker, over under 99 and a half tackles. For reference, he had 60 as a true freshman, and the leading tackler last year, Josh Ross, had 106.
I'm going to hammer the over strictly because when I asked the three guys that we had the interview with, who should we be looking out for? They all looked at each other and said Junebug. And so I think he's going to have a real big year. Give me the over. You said 99 and a half?
99. So basically, is he going to hit that 100?
I'll take the over.
I think I'm going to go over too. I mean, this isn't a slight, like if Josh Ross can do it, but Junior Colson's special, and a lot of people see that he's going to be special. And if he's on the field a lot and he's playing a lot and he takes a leap from freshman to sophomore season, he had 60 as a true freshman, and he wasn't on the field nearly as much as Josh Ross. So I will take the over as well.
You know what? Hold up. Before we move on, we need to address this here. I see it in the comments. It says y'all need to have Cade on the show, and then we're too busy, you know, can't have Cade on because we're too busy hyping Jay. Let me tell you something. I have extended an invite to Cade going back to like all the way to like before last year. So we've been trying to get Cade on the show for a little while now. Some guys just aren't into doing the podcast. some guys just aren't into doing the podcast, but I don't want people to get the impression that it's like, we've literally had every single quarterback. We've had JJ on, we've had Davis Warren on, we've had Bowman on, but we have not had Cade on. And it's not our choice, not our doing.
You're just lucky. If I turn my computer just a little bit more this way, you can see my Cade with an X through it sign that I have. No, it's nothing like that.
I'd love to have him on.
I'd have him on, and I'd ask all these same questions, and I'd probably tell him that the offense could be better with JJ. I don't know if we'll ever get that opportunity. No, I wouldn't put it that way, but I would definitely want to ask him about what he thinks about that. I would. I'd be very curious.
Candid conversation.
When people say the offense has more potential with a guy like
that. I mean, at the end of the day, it's sports. I'm not insulting his family. I just happen to think there's another guy on the roster that can throw the ball better. I mean, that's really all it is. Anyway, should we shift back now? Shift back to the over-unders? But I wanted to address that. We don't have anything personal against Cade. We love Cade. Love to have him on the show anytime. I've got A.J. Henning in 2022. His rushing yards set at 500 and a half rushing yards. Again, for reference, in 2021, he had 162 rushing yards on just 9 attempts. Just 9 attempts. He had 162 yards.
So far under. Way under.
Under 500 yards rushing?
Was it Jim Harbaugh who said that A.J. Henning was going to be like Deebo Samuel?
Well, I think it started somewhere else. And then
he also said that Dan Vellari was going to be Taysom Hill. So I'm just
I think he said the intent was to use him that way. I think once they tried to use him that way, they figured out that the intent and the results didn't match up.
I'm going to pump the brakes on that because Well, it's like we just talked about a little bit ago. He didn't play enough last year.
How dare you pump the brakes on AJ Henning? That dude is all gas all day.
No. I would make, if I was calling the plays, I would make sure he got 1,000 all-purpose yards. But they haven't used him like that. They, like we said, there were literally games last year where he played less than multiple walks.
So you don't trust Jim Harbaugh. You don't trust this whole Deebo Samuel sort of. You think it's just.
I'm basing it on how much we saw AJ Henning last year, and I'm basing it on Dan Vellauri being compared to Taysom Hill.
Listen, I'm going to hammer the over on 500.5 because, like I said, he got 162 yards on 9 rushing attempts. If he can have 3 or 4 games where he has a few big runs, you get to 500 real quick. So if he's going to be a big part of this offense, if the Michigan offense is going to get to where it needs to be, AJ Henning has to play a part in it. I'm going to say over on 500.5 rushing yards. It better be over.
I'll tell you what, I hope it's over. I wish it would be. It could be. He's talented enough. I just haven't seen enough usage. And the Taysom Hill thing, I just cracks my shit every time I think of it. I'm like, Dan Vellauri's now playing at Syracuse because he was so much like Taysom Hill. Like, what are we doing here? That was so funny. I remember thinking, like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then, like, it just didn't. Like, he played, like, 4 snaps.
It didn't happen at all.
Like, Northern Illinois. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
But, all right.
Chess, not checkers. Brandon.
That's right. Cam Good, the aforementioned Cam Good, big defensive tackle from University of Central Florida, is now a Wolverine. They need help in the middle. I'm curious to see how much he's going to play. So that's my question, Chris. Cam Good, over, under 250.5 snaps. And here's some numbers for you, because I know snap count can be a little tricky to gauge. Chris Hinton played 593 snaps last year. Mozzie Smith played 544. Donovan Jeter played 287. And Jordan Whitley, who we thought might be this guy last year, played just 33 snaps. So Cam Good, 250.5.
I'm going to take the under because I had him, like, I was thinking more of like a Donovan Jeter type.
Okay.
Output from
287. So in
But I expect Jeter to maybe take another. You know, I don't know. I think I told you my reason why I'm on the fence with, and I can't say it here publicly, but I'm just on the fence with this Cam Good guy. We'll see if it pans out. But right now, I don't have high hopes.
Like somebody we know.
That's why. I don't have high hopes.
Is Jeter on the team? I thought Jeter was done.
Isn't he? I don't know. Is he
done? I think he's done. You just said, like, expected a big step out of Jeter this year.
Well,
I think he's off the team. He wasn't playing in the spring
game. Expected a big step out of Jeter, like that type of step.
Oh, okay.
So Jeter,
the type
of step that Jeter took last year, I would expect him to have that same type of production. So whatever Jeter did last year is what I would expect out of Cam Good.
I'm going to say the over for pretty much that same reason. Like, Jeter gave him 287, so I think that Cam Good can get to 250. And I don't know who else plays in the middle there. You got Mozzie Smith. Who else do you put? I mean, maybe it's Julius Welskopf. Maybe it's Chris Jenkins.
Chris Jenkins, yeah.
We've heard a lot about him.
Rayshon Benny.
Yeah, maybe one of the young guys. But there's, you know, you bring a veteran guy in there like that pushing 320. That's what I thought about Whitley last year.
I was going to say, that's what we said about Whitley. Right.
So we'll see. I'll take the over, but like,
look at us. We're both snake bitten based on things that happened last year with Whitley and with the Taysom Hill thing. It's really sad to see. This one, I'm going to get pretty specific on offense, and it's about week one. And it's about a guy that people are really going to be excited to see back on the football field. I've got Ronnie Bell's receptions for week one set at 5.5.
Over
week one, 5.5. Over for Ronnie Bell.
Okay. I had, as soon as you started the question, I said 6. You said 5.5. There's my over. So it's probably not by a lot. And, well, damn it. Now I'm about to talk myself out of it because two things. One, they're going to whoop that ass and they're going to run the ball a million times. But I'll still say the over because that's the number I thought of first. 6 was the number I thought in my head. We saw it last year, even when Michigan, you know, was running over teams. He came out of the gate and had a couple nice catches, the big punt return. I'll say over for Ronnie Bell week one, 6 catches.
I'm going to say under for a couple reasons. One, I think they're going to be whooping that ass. Two, I think that there's, again, a lot of weapons that they're going to try to use throughout the first few weeks of the season. And I also think that they're going to try to protect him. They lost in week one last year. They're not going to want to lose in week one this year. So, you know, if he gets a couple big receptions in the first quarter, maybe even the first half, I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see him again.
All right, here's what we need to – it's decision time. We have five left. You might have just – you went first, so you might have just read your sixth one, actually.
I did, yeah. I've only got four left. But I can cut out – I mean, we can cut them down to two. Let's just go pick our – you want to go two more each?
We're at 55 minutes. I mean, we could keep going. My wife just said, your son is waiting for you up here to go to bed. All right, well, duty calls. What do we think, people? Should we keep going? Should we cut it? I mean, here's the deal.
Let's give him a couple more.
We're going to do them next week. So, I mean, it's not like.
Yeah, let's give him a couple more, and then we'll cut off.
Where did I leave off at? All right, I'm going back to the interior of that defensive line because I do think that's one of the bigger question marks. Mazi Smith, over under 49 and a half tackles. Last year he had 37. Over under 49 and a half. Can he get 13 more tackles than he had last year? And keep in mind, he played a lot of snaps last year too.
It's less than one tackle a game, assuming that they go as far as they did. And so I think yes, because I think he's going to have to, out of necessity, he's going to have to play a big role there in the middle. And I think based on everything we've heard, it seems like he's ready to do that. So I'll go over.
And it's interesting because you've got a new D-line coach and you've got a new defensive coordinator. So what does that snap count look like? Is he going to be a much heavier in the rotation kind of guy? Are they, you know, is he in good enough shape for that? Like, what are you going to get out of Mazi Smith in his senior season? It'd be interesting to watch. I think I'm going to take the under by about a hair. I think he will break 40. I think he'll be a little bit more productive than he was last year, but you mentioned it. They had the Big Ten championship game. They had the playoff game, a couple extra games to get some more snaps and numbers. You know, maybe they don't do that again in 2022. I'll take the under by just a little bit. And I got a bonus. Ooh. Will Mazi Smith get his first ever career sack? He has none.
Yes,
right now.
That's crazy to me. Yes, he will. Okay. He will absolutely get his first career sack. Flip back over to the offense. The Michigan offense five times in 2021 scored over 40 points in a game. So in 2022, I've got it set at 6.5. 6.5 games, they'll go over 40 points.
Yeah. I think, oh, man, I was going to say 6.
They did it five times last year.
Yes, I will say yes. Their defense is, I don't think, is going to be as sound. They're going to have to score more points. And if JJ's the guy, they spray it around. New weapons, new coordinator, yes. They got to be more explosive on offense. I need that. I want that. Inject that shit into my veins, man.
Yeah, score, I'm going to say over the first, the first portion of the season there looks pretty easy. They're going to score a lot of points there. And then I think a few on the back end, I think they're going to have an offensive explosion again, if assuming they have the right guys out there and they're using the weapons to their full potential. So I will go over, but with my fingers crossed, hopefully.
All right, here's another unorthodox, not your traditional over-under. Michigan's sack leader, Mike Morris, Jalen Harrell, or the field?
Ooh.
Mike Morris, Jalen Harrell, or the field?
I'm going to take the field.
Okay.
I'm going to take the field only because I feel about Mike Morris.
Wait. Let me clarify. This is not a total of the field. It just means somebody else that's not Mike Morris or Jalen Harrell.
Right, not those two. Correct. You know how I feel about Mike Morris. Love Mike Morris. But until he does it, I have a hard time just thinking he's going to be the guy. And so the safe money is going to be on the field. There's enough options out there. Even coming out of the secondary of guys that could get in the backfield and get a sack. So we'll have to see what the defense looks like.
I actually think it's going to be Jalen Harrell. I'm incredibly high on that kid. I think he flashed a number of times last year. Saw it a little bit more in the spring game. I love his build. I love his athleticism. I think he could be utilized in a very, very creative and exotic way. He looks like a running back. He's wearing number 32, dude. Like, that dude's running all over the place. Get in the backfield, get some sacks, make some plays. I will say that Jalen Harrell is going to lead the Michigan Wolverines in sacks this upcoming season.
I like it. That would be impressive. It would kind of be sort of a David Ojabo type rise to, to start him there. All right, here's an interesting one I've got for you. How many true freshmen will score touchdowns true freshmen will score touchdowns in 2022. So last year, unless I missed one, I could only find three. I've got Edwards, who scored a touchdown, Andrell Anthony, and obviously J.J. McCarthy. I've got the over-under set at 3.5. 3.5 freshmen will score a touchdown.
I think it's under, because I just don't think there's going to be that many that play on offense. I think they're just – like Darius Clemens was the only one that came to mind right away. If he gets in there and makes a play – and even that feels a little bit like a reach because there's just so many dudes at receiver who can play. And he's one of them. There's no doubt. But, like, I'm trying to think of who else. Like, who else?
Tyler Morris?
Even know if he's going to be ready to go coming off the knee injury.
Ryan Walker, I think there is,
I don't
right?
Think, I don't, I'd say under that number. You said 3.5?
3.5.
Obviously, there's not going to be a true freshman quarterback playing. Yeah, I'm gonna say under. And Darius Clemens might be the only one. Maybe none. Maybe there are no true freshman touchdowns in 2022.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what that number looks like from year to year, because I don't know if 3.5 is a lot. Initially, it seemed like low, but as you talk through that, I'm going to go under as well. Darius Clemens was the one guy who came to mind.
Will Johnson on a pick six.
Yeah. You know, you get like an end around down at the red zone. I mean, you try to get, you know, if you're up big and you're trying to get some freshmen some reps and you're doing some of those jet sweep type things just to get some guys in the end zone, you could see it happen. But still, I don't have anything to compare it to because I don't know what that number looks like year over year.
Just don't see the freshman tight end playing all that much. Clemens might be the only receiver to get a bunch of playing time. Marion Walker is very, very thin still, but you can get away with that a little bit at receiver. And like I said, Morris is still coming back off the knee injury. He might not even be ready to go fully. So I just don't think there's a, you know, running back. I don't know if there's going to be a, you know, CJ Stokes going to play at all. I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of guys available for that. So I'm going to say under. All right, we'll go quickly through these last couple. We're almost
done. I've only got one more, so.
I've got three more somehow.
That's weird.
Did I do 10? Whatever. Michigan's defense as a whole. Michigan's defense as a whole. Over under 29.5 sacks. Last year they had 34. That was 39th in the country. So like that number sounds good and it looked good because Aiden Hutchinson and Ojabo, but it wasn't like they were elite. But I'm setting the number even a little lower than that at 29.5.
I'm going to say over, I hope, because that's still quite a bit lower. And for that to be as low as it was, I mean, you're losing to what would have been first round picks, you know, off the edge there. And so they're going to lose something, but I think it's got to be more. What'd you say? 29?
29.5.
I think it's got to be more than 29.5. So I'll go over.
I'm going to say under. I think it's going to be by committee. I don't think you're going to see a 12, 13 by one guy and 10 or 11 by another guy like we did this past season. I think it's going to be spread out a little bit more, maybe a couple sprinkled in there from the DBs. And there's a new D coordinator and a lot of new guys playing. I think it's going to be tough to get back to that production. Like you said, those are two first-round talents that you don't have anymore. I think it's going to be under that. I do. I think it's going to be under 29.5.
All right, man. Last one I got on the offensive side of the ball. They only did this two times in 2021, score under 21 points. They scored under 21 against Rutgers, ironically, and Georgia. So for 2022, I've got the over-under for fewer than 21 points in a game at 1.5. The Michigan offense will score fewer than 21 points in a game at 1.5 games.
I think it'll happen one time, and I don't know where. I don't know if it's a stinker.
In Kinnick.
Yeah, absolutely would be one of the ones where it could happen. But at home, you know, at home against Penn State, at home against Michigan State, go to Columbus, yeah, that's really tough. And maybe there could be some weather, but it's going to be a back-and-forth game, you would think. Yeah, I'll say under. I think, it happens, you know, it's hard to be really, really good every week. And so there will be a stinker. Like you said, Rutgers at home. How the hell do they score 20 points in that game? So, yeah, you have to think it might happen at least one time, but that might be about it. I'll say one time.
I'll take the under as well. Just too much firepower, and I, even though I feel snake bitten and a little bit jaded, I've got too much faith in these guys, Sherrone Moore and Matt Weiss, to see what they have in front of them and to use it the right way. And so if they're not averaging damn near 40 points a game, there's a big problem.
All right, Michigan's defense as a whole, again, this is one area that I always feel, for as good as Michigan is, they're not very good at this, and that's takeaways. I would love to see more picks, more fumbles, more defensive scores. I mean, you remember back a couple of years ago where Alabama had a defensive touchdown like 9 weeks in a row or some shit. I can't remember the last time Michigan did that a couple times in the same season. So we'll start with the turnovers, just pure turnovers first. Last year, Michigan had 15 takeaways, over under 12 and a half. Over under 12 and a half takeaways for this defense.
Over.
Okay.
I'll go over because I think you're going to see more production out of the secondary.
I'll say over. I'll say over because I think they'll probably give up more touchdown receptions, but they might get their hands on some more balls too. Not as many sacks, not as much QB pressure. That means the ball is going to be up for grabs a little bit. There's some talent back there. You got some guys who can make some plays. I'll say over. Probably not by a lot. It might be around that same number, like 15, 16, like last year. But I would love to see that number hit 20, you know, where Michigan's taking the ball away regularly. Because, it's never been a thing for Michigan defenses, I don't feel like. And last one, I've got one more. We'll finish with this. Michigan's defense as a whole, again. Last year, Mike McDonald, first and only year as Michigan's defensive coordinator, the defense gave up 17.4 points a game. That was good for number 8 in the whole country. I think that number is going to go up a little bit, but how much is the question? I have it set just under 20, 19.5 points per game for this defense next year. Where do you see it?
I'll take under, but slightly. I mean, right at 19, 18.5, I would put it. So I'll take the under, but not by much.
I'm going to take the over, but about the same. I think if somebody said, how many points are they going to give up next year? I'd say 20.
About 20
so it's
points
at 20, 21 points, you know, three scores. I think the offense is going to be better. I think the defense is going to take some time to figure it out. But I still think it could be pretty good. They've got some talent there. But that's a great mark. Number 8 in the country. 17 points a game, dude. That's getting
not a bad season in Ann Arbor for Mr. Mike McDonald.
That is getting it done on a lot of levels. I love it, dude. I love over-unders.
The people apparently love it. Listen to that.
Yeah, I love the over-unders. And actually, we're at an hour and 7 minutes. That's perfect. So
yeah,
we'll get on out of here on that note. We talked about quite a bit, man. We got some transfer stuff in there, the basketball decisions, the Imani Bates sighting, your exploding computer. I mean, we really did a lot right there.
And I will say, look at there is, for anybody out there that follows us, there's some big stuff that we're doing this summer. There's some stuff that's coming up that's going to be pretty cool that I guarantee nobody else out there is going to be doing. So just hang with us. Pay attention this summer. There's some cool stuff coming your way.
He's got calling the shots. We're even talking about a new level of custom apparel for next season. That's all I'll say. A new level.
Some good content coming.
Of custom apparel. Woo! I got chills thinking about it just now, dude. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Thank you so much for everybody who stuck with us for well over an hour. Look, it's getting to be May. People aren't doing as much with sports right now. Football's dead. Basketball's dead.
Weather sucks.
We really, really appreciate those of you who stick around here with us and make it feel like we're not talking to the wall. Look, our live viewer numbers aren't as big as they are during the season. That goes without saying. But we do really appreciate the ones who stick around and chill with us a little bit and give us something to talk about and give us a little feedback because that's always cool. So thank you so much for listening. We will be back again on Wednesday next week unless we got some really pressing stuff to talk about. But if not, we'll see you guys in a week. Take care, everybody.